We care about the ingredients that we eat in our food and the beauty products that we use. So why shouldn't the same be true of our tampons? Lola was founded with a simple and seemingly obvious idea that women shouldn't have to compromise when it comes to tampons. Since Lola was created by women for women, we created a product we'd want to use ourselves. Great news, guys. Lola tampons are 100% natural and 100% easy to feel good about. Unlike major tampon brands, Lola offers complete transparency about the ingredients found in their tampons. No BS, no mystery fibers, no more doubts about what's going in your body. Lola tampons are 100% cotton with no added chemicals, fragrances, synthetics, or dyes. Plus, you guys, Lola comes in a simple, customizable subscription, so you'll never need to make another frantic trip to the drugstore. Lola will deliver exactly what you need when you need it. I love it when my box shows up every single month. So if you guys want a special offer and unique promo code, it's 60% off your order. The promo code is Lovin, L-O-V-I-N. All you have to do is go to mylola.com and enter Lovin, L-O-V-I-N, when you subscribe. Hello, everyone, and welcome to your Monday. I hope that this finds you all well wherever you're listening. It's me, Greta Teitelman, and I am joined by my two best friends.
Hi, this is Lo.
Lo is eating oatmeal right now, and it's just really weirding me out.
Why?
I don't know. The way you're eating it was confusing to me.
I'm starving.
It's Jilly.
Hi, Jilly. Hi, Lo. Today, we are joined by an amazing guest who I have had the pleasure of knowing for years now. Mm-hmm. And, you know, she's just a real, like, badass woman. You really are. Everyone, please welcome author and butcher, Cara Nicoletti. Hi.
Thanks for having
Snaps
me.
Snaps for Cara.
I'm really excited for today's episode.
Me too.
Me three. Me four.
Cara is a famous lady butcher.
No. Yes.
Butcher of meats and animals.
And sausages.
Yep.
And steaks.
Yes.
But for real, you're a big deal.
Big deal lady butch.
There are not a lot of female butchers.
No, there aren't.
And it's really exciting to have you on to get the scoop on the industry and how you decided to become a butcher.
Yeah. All these things. Fascinating.
I guess we should start there. Why and how?
Why? Well, it's a family trade for me, so it goes back, I think, three generations. My great-great-grandpa was like a cowboy in Russia and like a cattle merchant and butcher. And
whoa.
Then my great-grandpa was a butcher, my grandpa was a butcher, and they had a shop in the north end of Boston. And it skipped a generation because my grandpa had my mom and two other daughters, and he didn't really want them to do it. So we grew up, my cousins and my sisters and I grew up hanging out there, working there at the register, but we weren't cutting.
What was the name of it?
It was called Sillette's. And it started in the north end of Boston, and then it moved to a suburb called Newton, Massachusetts. So we grew up around it, but it wasn't something that was like presented to us as an option. I think my grandpa just really didn't want us to do that. So
why?
You know, when I was younger, I thought it was because I'm a woman, a girl. But the older that I get, the more I realize it's just it's a really hard job. It's a really hard industry. And he wanted more for us. He wanted us to do something else. He always said, like, I worked my whole life so that you could sit at a desk and have clean hands.
Yeah.
So he sold the shop, I think, on purpose before any of us were old enough to take it over. And then I moved to New York in 2004 to go to NYU, and I was working in restaurants. I was baking and working as a pastry chef.
Yeah, because you started as a pastry chef.
Yeah. I think those are just, I mean, I started at the front of the house, like waitressing and busing and serving coffee. And baking was the easiest job to get as like a young girl with no experience. Chefs were the most comfortable letting me into the kitchen. So I started doing that. And one of the restaurants I was working at, I was baking at a place called Pies and Thighs in
Pies and Thighs.
Yeah.
I used to walk by that every day.
It's so good.
It's so good. It's like very slutty and delicious, and you feel horrible after eating there, but it's so good. But I was baking there, and one of the owners there, this girl, Erica, her grandfather was a Jewish butcher also. And we used to talk about it all the time. And she was like, if we're ever slow on baking, if you want to do like some light butchery work, breaking down chickens and pork shoulders, you can do that. So
fun.
Yeah. So I started doing that. And
what was the first thing? Breaking down
a chicken.
It sounds so crazy. Yeah.
That's kind of, for me, that's a skill that like home cooks should know and a lot of times don't know, but it's something that I did know just from growing up. It's, you know, like breaking a chicken into breasts and legs and thighs.
Right.
And, so doing things like that, because we serve tons of fried chicken, so I was doing a lot of that. And it sort of piqued an interest in me, and I walked around my neighborhood. This was like in 2009, I think. And I walked around my neighborhood and was asking all the old dudes if I could come and apprentice on my days off, and they were all like, no. What are you talking about? They were all old dudes like my grandpa, and they were just like, I mean, you can work the register, but like absolutely not, you cannot cut here. So then I went to the Meat Hook, and the Meat Hook, the guys were like, yeah, you can come in tomorrow. So I started going there on my days off, was working as a pastry chef by that point at a restaurant called Colony in Brooklyn Heights,
which is also delicious.
So good. Yeah. And the sticky date cake and the donuts on the menu there are still mine, which
are delicious.
The chef there wanted to start getting whole animals, and none of the guys in the kitchen knew how to do it. And I was like, I know how to do that. So I started doing their pastry and their butchering and working at the Meat Hook on my days off. And it was like really a lot. And then,
all that you do is work.
I know, which is probably why I'm single. And so then I quit Colony. The Meat Hook hired me on full time. I was there for like 5 years.
Can you tell me what a day in the life of the Meat Hook was like? Starting from like, I guess, what you wore.
Sure.
Like, I guess all the steps.
I have like two pairs of pants that I always wear. They're just like gross jeans. And I buy bulk like dollar store t-shirts, Hanes t-shirts that are white so that I can put them in a bleach wash.
So you literally just wear a t-shirt. You don't wear like a...
I wear an apron, and I have a scabbard that I wear around my waist.
What is that?
It's a belt that holds my knives so that when I'm cutting, I don't leave, like no one leaves knives on the table because it can be dangerous. Like if something's hiding it and you grab it and you grab a knife.
Yeah.
So right. Everyone just keeps their knives like on their
waist. Great. I love safety. So that's great.
Safety is super important.
It's very important.
So what time do you need to be? Typically, what time do butcher shops open?
Typically in New York, they open around 8 or 9 a.m. It's weird. The hours, especially in shops in Manhattan, they close at like 7. I was looking last night because my friend needed something
PM?
Weird. Yeah, they close at 7 p.m., which is crazy. The hours of the shops I've worked at are generally like 8 to 8,
mm-hmm.
which is not bad. It was actually one of the pulls for me because working in restaurants, you don't have set hours at all. And
right.
you can most of the time you're there yeah. like 16 hours a day.
Mm-hmm.
So working in a shop has a lot more stability. You make less money because you make less overtime hours, but
yeah.
The stability is worth it.
So you get there at 8 a.m., and then what happens?
If I'm making a lot of sausage, sometimes I'll get there earlier, like 7 a.m.
Okay.
So now I'm at a place called Foster Sundry. We just opened in December. The first thing is you set the case, which is, you know, like the thing that people walk in and see. And that takes about an hour because you want to make sure it looks really good.
So that means you're just putting meat on this case.
Yeah.
So people will look at it and walk
Yeah,
by.
You're like cutting chops. You're facing things that aren't... You know, like meat oxidizes really quickly. So if it's sitting out overnight, even if it's wrapped, it will get like an ugly face on it. So we'll cut it off with a saw, put out new sausages, things like that. So that's like the main thing. And then the rest of the day is breaking down. Usually, like if we'll get an animal, we get animals in like 3 times a week. So a cow one day, a pig, a couple of pigs the next day, a lamb one day, and we'll break them into their parts. And I make a lot of sausage too.
Do you ever get like a random animal?
No.
Like a deer?
Well, or
like
every once in a while,
like a bison.
Yeah, every once in a while we'll get like sows or boars from our pig farmers. Usually they're animals that like, so a sow is basically a pig that's had a bunch of litters of piglets, and they're not prized because they're older. They're not prized as like good meat, but they're actually really delicious. They're huge. They come in sometimes and they're like almost the size of a small beef.
Whoa.
But they're really good.
Do you like put them in sausage or like what do you?
You can. So if we get a boar, we'll usually put it in sausage or like a ragu, something with like a lot of spice because they have a really strong flavor.
Yeah.
Basically male animals that haven't been castrated have like a strong bad flavor and tough muscles.
Because of all the hormones.
Because of all the testosterone. Yeah. But then that being said, breeding animals also, like women also, it feels weird calling them women.
I know.
Like bad.
But female.
Female animals that have bred and nursed also have like weird fat contents and weird muscle structure. And
well, so. Obviously, because you get those hips added on after
exactly,
childbirth.
And all the like the milk fats.
Did you, when you, the first like big animal that you ever broke down, was that like an emotional experience for you? Like, did you feel bad or sad? Because,
well, it's weird. I grew up seeing this, so I think that I was desensitized to it in a way, but I was also sort of more aware of it. I think the biggest thing for me that was very emotional and still is very emotional is like when I go visit the farms and see the animals. And like I go and visit the slaughterhouses because it's important to me to see
how they're being treated.
And we work with really good, I know it sounds weird, but, and I'm probably going to get a lot of hate for this, but we work with good like small family slaughterhouses, and they have a cap on how many animals they're processing a day, so they're not churning through like 1,000 cows. It's like 5, you know. So every animal isn't stressed and is treated with as much respect as it can be treated with before it's killed.
Do you think that the meat like tastes different on an animal that comes from like a farm of 1,000 because of the stress?
Well, there is something called meat taint, which is kind of a gross term, but it's basically if an animal is stressed at slaughter, you can see, like I can see it on the table, and that's something that will call the slaughterhouse or call the farm and just say like this animal was stressed at slaughter. You can see it's called a dark cutter, and it has like clots and sort of like burst. You can see it, and we really don't like to see that, but it also does change the flavor and the texture of the meat. If an animal is super super stressed, basically you can't eat the meat.
That's
tastes
so
horrible.
Interesting.
Yeah.
And you can tell that when you're butchering it.
I can yeah.
And then you just wouldn't sell it.
We wouldn't sell it, and we also would make sure we called the farmer and said the slaughterhouse, you know, something happened at the slaughterhouse, the animal was stressed.
That breaks my heart.
I know. It's I remember telling, I went to the farm once and we told one of the farmers, like, the last animal we got in was stressed. We could see it was dark cutting, and she, like, burst into tears.
Really?
And it was really emotional. Because she works really hard to make sure that the animals live a good life and are cared for. And, you know, that's heartbreaking to all of us. It is. I don't like to see that either.
Yeah. I think if anyone ate me, it would all be, like, stress.
Totally.
We used to talk about that all the time at the meat hook,
and it was it always ended up being the conversation that caused the most like stress and fights, because we'd be like, who would you eat first and what would they take, you know what I mean? Like, there was always someone who was last, and then we're like, well, what the fuck?
Yeah. Why don't you want me first? Yeah. It's so interesting with butchery. It was my favorite part of culinary school and still my favorite part of cooking, to be honest with you. I feel like it's such an art form, and you can totally just get lost in it. Mm-hmm. At least I would.
Yeah.
And it was just really fascinating to me. And there's definitely an emotional component to it. But I think that if you work in a kitchen or if you, you know, are a butcher, you know, every job on the planet has to be filled by somebody. And mm-hmm. if, you know, you're really good at it and you're passionate about it, I think that's really wonderful.
Yeah. And, you know, I think a lot of times vegans and vegetarians, they really don't like people like me because I work in the meat industry, and I understand that.
I was going to ask you.
Yeah, like I'll
do you have
I'll
vegetarian get, or I'll vegan friends who are like, fuck oh, yeah. you, Kara?
Yeah, I do. I have, but also, like, I'm basically a vegetarian. I don't really eat meat. So, but, you know, we have a lot of conversations about it, which is good. And I think what vegetarians and vegans don't understand about me is that I'm really on their team. Like, in a perfect world, maybe no one would eat meat, mm-hmm. but that's never going to happen. It's not a realistic goal. So for me, it's important to educate people how to do it in a smarter and more compassionate way. And generally, that means eating less of it. If we all yeah. ate less meat,
yeah.
we could do it in a better way. If
we'd also save the environment if we
exactly.
slaughtered yeah. less animals.
Exactly. 100%.
So what are your feelings towards, like, hormones and that sort of stuff, like in the meat?
Yeah.
Do people come in? Is that, like, a big question yeah. you guys get all the time? Or
yeah, there are a lot of
like
buzzwords.
How animals are raised, yeah. that kind of a thing.
Yeah, there yeah. are buzzwords that people know, which is great because it means that they're being educated in some capacity. You know, like, are your chickens pastured? Is your beef grass-fed? And hormones are a big thing. I've never worked with animals that are given hormones. I don't even know. I mean, I guess.
I feel like the animals now that are given hormones are all just, like, processed at huge facilities yeah. so, that, like, don't even have a human butcher
exactly.
butchering them.
Well, so what the hormones do is they make the animals grow at a much more rapid pace and put on fat a lot faster. So, and they're also able to, like, feed more babies and that
but
kind of thing.
Isn't that, like, most of the meat that America's eating?
Yes. Which is horrible because those hormones are, you know, causing high rates of cancer, and they're especially bad for women to be ingesting hormones.
Yeah.
Because our hormones are, like, so delicate.
I think that's something that a lot of people don't realize yeah. is that you really are what you eat. And if yeah. you're eating animals that have been, you know, raised at a huge farm or, you know, are really processed, mm-hmm. I don't think yeah. that a lot of people have been educated to make that connection.
I know. And they're also, if they're getting antibiotics, which I think
it's terrible
has been,
for you.
I think has been outlawed. I mean, I know that a lot of places,
I think a lot
market,
of states are starting yeah. to put regulations on
but it's
on
bad
it.
Because then you're ingesting these antibiotics and then your body becomes antibiotic resistant, and it's,
yeah.
It's a terrible.
I recently went to a restaurant in Laguna, where I'm from, with my parents, because I was just curious. You know, I always worry about, like, what my parents are eating, because
yeah,
I'm way more
too.
Crazy about that than they are. Mm-hmm. And so I, like, asked to see, like, where they got their meat from, and, like, none of it was organic, and it was, like, a fancy restaurant in Laguna.
Well, it's interesting. A lot of the time,
organic is a buzzword that doesn't actually mean very much.
Sorry, and yeah. none of it was, like, it didn't say hormone free.
That's crazy.
But also, it was a fancy restaurant. So it's like, it's not just, so that's what
yeah,
kind
definitely.
Of concerns me, is like, even if you're going somewhere fancy that isn't like a McDonald's or a fast food restaurant, you still need to ask.
Yeah. yeah for a lot of these places, it's about cost.
Exactly.
For
yeah.
sure.
And also the cuts that they want to use. So, like, it's about consistency also, because a restaurant wants to be able to say, we have a hanger steak on the menu. Well, there's only one hanger steak per cow. So if you see a hanger steak on the menu, that means that they're getting boxes and boxes of hanger steaks from hundreds and hundreds of cows. If
right.
they're doing tons of if that's a big seller for them. So if you're, a lot of restaurants can't, and this is something we come up against, they'll take our grind, because we always have trim and grind to sell. But in terms of selling them steaks, it's like, if we're just getting one cow a week, we can't promise them that we'll have as
all
many
the meat
steaks
that they need for their menu.
Yeah, like specific steaks that
yeah.
they want. So a lot of restaurants, we try to work with them to say, like, you could have a rotating menu of steaks that are kind of similar.
Yeah.
You know.
Right.
Because you're not going to get, well, that's interesting, because then all these restaurants that need, like, that have, like, the set menu, it's like they must be getting their meat from a larger
exactly,
facility
yeah.
in order to have all of the options that they need for their
yeah.
menu, which probably means that it's not as good.
Exactly, yeah.
Right, like all of these steakhouses, are
yeah.
they getting their meat from, like, crazy
yeah,
processed
from,
places?
Yeah.
Like Peter Luger's. Peter Luger's,
yeah. Well, it's funny because yeah, I ate
kind of meat today have at Peter Luger's.
I don't know. I don't know if it's maybe Pat LaFrieda.
I'm going to look it up, actually.
Yeah, actually, you should look it up.
What's the deal with Pat LaFrieda anyway? Pat LaFrieda.
I'm not going to talk shit. No.
Pat LaFrieda is where we got all of our meat at Connors.
Yeah, so he does. So he's sort of under the umbrella of like an artisan.
Right.
And I think he is working. I don't really know very much about him. I know that he does. I think he does like smaller artisan things, and he also does like big batch.
Right.
You know, do what you got to do to. He's servicing tons of restaurants.
I see the truck everywhere in Manhattan.
Wait, I'm not even joking, you guys. I thought that Pat LaFrieda for the longest time was scared. Like a style of like cooking a burger, because it never would be like burger like Pat LaFrieda.
So, it's so funny to me that his name is like on. I mean, I think it's cool, but
is that meat like sustainable? Is it?
I don't know enough about where he's getting his animals from to say. What does it say?
Well, like Peter Luger, you're on their website, and all it says is like when you want to order, because you can order their meat to be FedEx to you in 24 hours.
Oh my God, that's
and it
crazy.
Just says Peter Luger steak, meat package A, like 4 USDA prime dry aged strip steaks. So how are you supposed to know what kind of meat, if that's hormone free, if it's organic, so or if it's free range?
But generally, so like our meat doesn't have a grading system. Like the meat that I've cut with, it doesn't say like prime or, you know, because we're not monitored by the USDA. We're monitored by something called Ag and Markets.
What's the difference between those two?
So Ag and Markets is, it's for much smaller places that aren't providing to like supermarkets.
Got it.
Yeah. So in order to qualify for Ag and Markets, you can't be basically
selling supermarket.
In supermarket or in any kind of huge bulk.
But could you sell to like a small market?
We can sell to restaurants.
But like if I were to open up a little tiny market and I was like, hey, Cara, can I have some of your sausages to sell
I'm
at
not
my
sure,
restaurant?
Actually. I don't know. Like farmers markets, I think we can sell to farmers markets.
Got it.
But generally people who sell meat at farmers markets are like farmers that are selling it direct from their farm.
Which is probably better. So going back to the buzzwords, there's like hormone-free, antibiotic-free, free-range, organic,
pasture-raised.
Mm-hmm. So what are the most, like is free-range, would you say that's, because I feel like that's really important because if not, then they're just like getting fed in like a cage and it's also inhumane. So it's like,
really
what do you
tricky.
Look for when you're at a restaurant or when you're buying meat or anything.
Yeah,
of that.
Like if you're at the grocery store, what's the terminology that actually is important that you should be looking
so
out
for? So pastured is important. The thing that's tricky about words like free range is that, you know, because the USDA is this huge thing, there are all these loopholes. So basically free range can mean that the chicken got to walk 2 feet for 5 minutes a day.
Don't tell me that.
No, I know.
That was like something I was going off of when I was
eating meat. So you have to like, it's a pain in the ass to be a conscious meat eater. You need to really like look up the particular brand and see what they're doing.
It's literally, and you know, that episode of Portlandia, I'll never forget, but in Portlandia, you know, they're at that restaurant and they like drive out to the farm to see where the chicken came from. But like, that is kind of true.
It is. But you know, then there's also the fact that animals, they're dying no matter what for our consumption.
Yeah.
We want that to happen in a good way, but like, we also can't get obsessive about
how good the quality of life is.
But then there's also like, okay, what if their animals are only fed corn and corn is supposed to be really bad for you?
Corn's really bad for,
because it has.
So basically what's bad for an animal is bad for you if you're eating that animal.
Yeah.
And corn is very bad for cattle to eat.
There's another word that I'd like to throw in, not have with my meat. It's like non-corn fed.
Yeah, so grass fed. But then with grass fed, you have to ask if it's grass finished, because
what's grass finished?
So basically,
oh man,
so now there's all these ways for places like Purdue and like big conglomerates to put the words out there that consumers now are smart enough to know that they want to hear, but without actually, so they'll say grass fed. Basically you could say any cow was grass fed because at some point in its life it ate grass or hay.
Oh, so it doesn't matter if it's continuously, just if at some point.
Yeah,
they
and also
it
it's like, you know, a lot of times what they'll do is they'll feed it grass for its whole life, and then the last 6 months, 3 months, whatever, they'll feed it, they'll like glut it with corn and grain so that it puts on fat. It's very hard to get marbling and fat on an animal if they're just eating grass. And we work with farmers. It's like a crazy science that, you know, people are either good at or they're not good at. But, you know, the rumor about pastured, grass-fed, grass-finished beef is that there's no marbling and there's, you know, no flavor. And that's not true, but it is true that there's less marbling.
Yeah.
And you have to kind of get used to the flavor. The flavor is really different.
It's different than what, because we've been fed, like,
we've been fed bad. But it's funny, I go to Peter, like, I went to Peter Luger's a couple months ago.
Yeah. Peter Luger's, for our listeners that don't
know,
is, like, the most famous steak place in Manhattan.
Yeah.
Well, it's in Brooklyn.
It's in Brooklyn, yeah.
In New York.
In New York, right.
And I, but it's, I ate one of their steaks. Yeah, it's crazy. Also, so I've been there twice, and the first time was for my college graduation, and I brought my Papa Seymour there, who was a butcher, and he was like, he could not get over the fact that they cut your steak up for you and like put it back in the bone. He's like, how do you know that you're getting the steak that they are? I'm like, Papa, they're not like jipping you on the steak. But
I will say the experience there is interesting. I went there for my 21st birthday, and you know, you're in this steakhouse, there's no music playing, the lights are extremely bright. Extremely bright. There's no ambiance. There's like no kind of vibe to the place at all. And the guy that's serving you is literally 90 years old.
No, but the thing that's great about that for me is that like those are the old school waiters that actually like that was a profession. Like,
oh my God, they actually care.
They've put probably five kids through college.
That's being their a fucking waiter. Career.
Yeah.
And you don't see that anymore because being a server is a means to an end. It has a flexible schedule so you can be an actor. And, you know, and that's great. I did it while I was in school. But these guys are like professional waiters.
But when you work, and the service is great for that reason.
It's really good.
Care.
Also, sometimes they're super rude, but you forgive them for it because they're so old.
Yeah,
and they're up for, so late.
I went there for a birthday and I just had like three whiskeys. I was just like, I can't even deal. Like,
all
I'm so frightened by all. All I want when I go
there is a martini and an ice cream sundae. I don't want to fuck with the meat at all.
No, I don't know why. Like, it's too frightening.
Yeah. Also, it tastes like buttered popcorn to me. It doesn't taste like meat because it's
when they put it in so much clarified butter and stuff like
and
that
it's so grain fed that it doesn't even taste like meat to me anymore.
So basically,
I was just going to ask. So when you, since you are so, like, you have a master's or like a PhD in meat essentially because I know myself and I'm probably going to speak for Jilly and Lo, like my meat education, I had no idea about half of this stuff at all. I mean, I know a lot about like sustainability in meat and all of that shit, but it's like crazy how much stuff is just given to all these animals and then everyone else is just forced to eat it because, like you're saying, there are so many loopholes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it's hard, too, because bad meat is cheap. And people who don't have a lot of money, it's a really quick, cheap way for them to get protein that they need and feed a family that's big, you know, to give them the protein that they need. So it's a whole system that needs dismantling and rethinking because you can't tell people to eat more consciously or eat vegetarian when they don't have the money to do that.
Yeah, right. Would you say that, like, trying, if you can and you have, like, the time or the money to get your meat from a small butcher shop is just the way to go as opposed to grocery stores?
Yeah, I would say, you know, look in your town, wherever you are, and see if there's butcher shops that source from local farms and, like, really talk to them and see where they're getting their meat from and what it's all about. I mean, I would think that it's becoming a big thing in the last 5 years. And most major cities have a place that you can buy meat. And if you can't, there are a couple of sources online that sell.
Yeah, you can deliver it because you can get everything FedEx.
What are those places?
I can't remember what it's called, but I remember I wrote about it once for Food 52, like, because people were like, I live in North Dakota and there's nothing.
But that's also crazy to me because you're like living, people are like, oh, I'm living like in Iowa or whatever. It's
like, that's farmland.
Yeah, it's farmland. It's like corn, you should be able
to. It's corn farmland and it's corporate farmland.
Yeah. But I mean, it's like crazy these because it's like people, we're living in New York and there's no land anywhere. And we can get it, and it's like at these places
with all
this land.
Live in New York City,
for sure. I just think it's like a funny.
I think a lot of people, well, not a lot of people, but I know a few people who have relationships with farmers, and they buy, you know, like half a cow mm-hmm. a year. And so, you know, you know exactly where right. your meat mm-hmm. is coming from, and you put it in your freezer and, mm-hmm. you know, yeah. you defrost yeah. it.
So my grandpa was actually sort of like at the forefront of that in like the 1970s.
Or oh, that's 60s, so interesting.
Because he started selling... It was before everyone had freezers in their home, so he started selling freezers and then selling people basically like a year's worth of meat with in a freezer.
Amazing. Yeah. I love that. I would, you know, like that, because that'd be so easy if someone was like, yeah. there's a freezer with your dinner.
Do I'd you
be
guys like, want to okay. hear a really crazy story that will yes. take me 2 minutes to tell?
Yes.
So, Kara and I know each other because Kara is cousins with my ex-boyfriend. And when Cam and I were dating, he was at my family's Thanksgiving, and my mom's side of the family is from Scranton, Pennsylvania, mm-hmm. and, you know, he was talking to my uncle, and we were having a good time, and my uncle was asking Cam about his family, and Cam was like, oh, my grandfather had a butcher shop, and he actually did business in Scranton. He had a mm-hmm. business partner in Scranton where he would... backpack mm-hmm. these chops, the frozen meat, to put in the freezers. And my uncle, like, gets this crazy mm-hmm. look on his face and is like, who's your grandfather? Like, what's his last name? Yeah. And Cam goes, Sillette. And my uncle was like Seymour?
Oh, God.
And his brother?
Bobby?
Yep.
Morris?
Bobby and Seymour. And it was crazy. My uncle was the accountant on their account God. In Scranton, Pennsylvania, when they started making freezer that backpack
so
meats.
Weird. You know, every single time I've ever been... We call that Jewish geography, even if your yeah. that side of the family wasn't Jewish. But... Seymour knows everyone. It's bizarre. Like, he came when Cam was still working at Minetta. Papa came to visit us, and he came and visited me at the Meat Hook, and we went to Minetta to like eat a steak, and Papa ran into like two people that he knew there in New York. Like, hadn't been in. He knows everyone. It's bizarre.
Well, he's such a like charming, he's so sweet. Wonderful, like yeah. light man that
I know. And he was really good. Like, he taught me a lot about customer service, which is honestly 90% of what I do is engaging with yeah. customers. Mm-hmm. And
you watching have such
him.
A return on customer, too. Like, if you get a customer, exactly. they're not going to another butcher
shop. But also,
yeah.
you have a really sensitive job. Like, yes. what you do is very touchy. Being a butcher is something that so many people will say, you know, you're so cruel, you're mm-hmm. terrible, how can you cut up? Yeah. Like animals.
Which is, I think, really interesting in the way that it's, you know, it used to be these big macho men and you couldn't really ask them any questions and they were scary. And I think there still is some of that. It's still a very macho thing.
Yeah. Do you ever get like shamed for being a girl?
Yeah. I think a lot of people think that I don't actually do this and I'm sort of like posing with meat and like trying to look oh. cute, which is fine. It's like, whatever.
That's you're like hilarious.
It's like you have like a Facebook page yeah. of like meat photos
yes,
or something. You're
I
like,
actually
no.
just was like meeting with this agent the other day, whatever. And he was like, yeah, when I saw your Instagram, I just assumed you were like not actually cutting meat. You were just like, and I was like, what are you talking about? Like, what is...
That's our world today, that people are, yeah. like, think that you have, like, a fake job because it's, like, a niche.
It's, like, a social
something.
Media job, yeah. which is, you know, like, it's obnoxious that that exists, but it's also incredibly helpful because I think it's helped me engage with people about meat and how we yeah. eat our meat, and that's important mm-hmm. to me. And I also think it's one of the reasons that women make really good butchers, which is something that people
don't
think.
Yeah, why do you think that?
Because they're more sensitive.
They're more sensitive, and I think... also, people think of it as being this sort of like brute force, large scale, macho thing, and it is. There's
like
so much of
that. Like chopping with a big
yeah, and you're carrying.
It's manual
like,
labor.
It's manual
yeah. crazy
labor.
Manual
My body
labor.
Is exhausted, and I will never
it's
lose weight
workout.
Because I can't lose weight because I won't be able to lift anything. But it's also a lot of precision work and sort of like quiet, meditative, small scale work. Which people don't really think about, and I think women are really good at that. They're really focused and precise. It's why it wasn't a huge jump for me to move from pastry into butchering. They didn't feel that different to me.
Pastry is so precise.
It's super
too.
Precise, and it's quiet, and it's small, and there's a lot of that in butchering too. There's mm-hmm. a lot of both things. I think it keeps my mind busier because there's a lot of different kinds of ways that you're using your brain. In pastry, I didn't feel that as much, but they're similar. Like, making a sausage is incredibly similar to making a dough, like kneading a dough. And women make really good pastry chefs for that reason. I think they make really good butchers for the same reason.
Mm-hmm. How much meat do you guys waste? Do you, like, don't, if you have anything, you don't, so you don't waste anything? So, I mean, if you don't sell something, would you, what happens with that? Do you donate it to a facility, or do you just take it home?
It's really, really difficult to donate anything to anyone because there's all kinds of laws about that.
Which is so crazy because people are starving in this world.
I know. It's insane. But we are careful about how many animals we get a week. You know, we are conscious of what we keep a really good track of what we're using, what we're able to use, even if it means saying to customers, we don't have that thing this week. So we look at the animal as an entirety and we use all of it, even if it means that some of it gets dehydrated and put into dog treats.
Oh, very cool.
Do you guys make dog treats?
We do make lots of dog treats.
That's so,
like,
so cool.
All the skin on the pigs and all the ears and snouts, everything gets dehydrated.
Oh, yeah, pig ears. My dogs love pig ears. Yeah,
I have a new puppy. I'm going to get
treats
from Carl.
I know. And then we'll take the cuts of beef that people won't really eat that are, you know, like, there's a cut on the cow called the wiggle, which is basically like the stomach. It's not the
wiggle.
Not the insides, not like the guts, but literally the meat of the stomach, and it's really tough. So we'll dehydrate it into little strips. It's
like
just beef.
Beef jerky. Mm-hmm. I love beef jerky.
So it's beef really jerky great. Could be stomach skin?
Well, beef jerky is probably not stomach skin because that's what we use for dog treats because it's so tough.
It's stomach meat.
But for jerky, usually we use something off the round, the leg, like sirloin tip. Just slice it. I mean, it's meat. You just slice it really thin, season it, dehydrate it, smoke it.
Whatever. Could you give our listeners and Jillie and Greta like a brief education on the animal from like the feet up and like the best cuts of meat?
Sure.
Because I think that's really interesting. Or? Yeah, like a cow.
Yeah.
So.
And why?
There's the cow's head, which actually we don't get at the shop because our animals are humanely slaughtered, which means that they get tapped in the head, which
so their head gets chopped
it.
Off.
Yeah. No. They get, it's like an air gun, and it's like they're eating something, and then all of a sudden it's like a pressure.
So then they chop their head off and give you the body.
Once the animal's dead.
Okay, that's what I was wondering.
No, but yes, I mean.
No, I was just wondering. Yeah, I don't know these terms.
They keep the head, and we'll get like the tongue. But beef cheeks are really good. People like to braise beef cheeks. They make really good ragu, and tongues are delicious. Actually, for tacos, if you've ever had a lengua taco, it's a tongue. Mm-hmm. There's also like three steaks you can get out of the very base of the tongue that Japanese people eat a lot. They're like really fatty, marbled, delicious
from
steaks.
The base of the tongue, yeah, so like, so right, like, in their throat.
Mm-hmm. So the tip, it gets like tougher and tougher, but there's like a lot of meat like right at the base of the tongue.
Interesting.
It's really marbled.
What is it called?
Tongue steaks.
Cool.
I don't know. You probably would only see it at a Japanese restaurant, and then it would have a name that I don't know the name of.
Interesting.
Okay, moving down, the second part, the shoulder area, is called the chuck. There's a ton of steaks that come out of the chuck that I really like. It's probably the cut that has the most steaks. There is the chuck eye roll, which basically is like the neck to here, and that's the same muscle as the ribeye.
So that's like the neck to the lower shoulder?
Yeah. Like to the ribs, kind of. And that's the same, the eye of the muscle is the same as the ribeye. So like a chuck roast, so it gets tougher and tougher as it moves up into the neck. So chuck roast is like that portion of it up in the neck. And then there's this middle section that we call the Delmonico or the chuck eye roll or chuck eye, which is that same muscle. So it's really marbled and really delicious. But it's like half the price of a ribeye and sort of like the eye of the ribeye.
Oh, interesting.
Like slightly tougher. I really like that steak a lot. And there's also a steak called the Denver steak, which is like an extension of the short rib muscle. And it's really marbled, kind of chewy, but in kind of a nice way, and has a ton of flavor. So basically, the trade-off with meat is always like tenderness versus flavor. So the tougher something is, the more flavor it's going to have, because that means that the muscle was working harder when the animal was alive, which means there's more blood flow to it, and it's going to be tougher, but it's going to have more flavor. Something like the tenderloin, which is really tender, has not worked very hard. You also see it has sort of a paler color because the blood flow, it just wasn't working as much, and that means less flavor. So a lot of the steaks from the chuck, from the shoulder, are going to be flavorful but have a little bit more chew to them. There's also a steak called the shoulder tender or teres major that's really good. It's like a little tenderloin kind of shaped thing, and it serves 1 to 2 people. It's tiny, but it's really tender because it's kind of like buried in there. And then, I mean, there's a million more steaks, but then you move down.
How many steaks do you get in a cow?
I mean, I could count them. It would take me a minute.
I love that. How many steaks come in a cow?
Yeah. I mean, basically, so where me and my grandpa differed was, he was like, there are certain things that are steaks and there are certain things that are trim. To me, any muscle is a steak. Meat is a steak. So you can make a steak out of any muscle. It might not be that good, but it's a steak. So hundreds.
Yeah. So like if you're eating ground beef, what part of the cow is that typically?
So this is another thing that people have gotten really into, like certain blends. And that's not sustainable, because in order for people to use an entire animal, they have to be able to grind the entire animal. If we're grinding our ribeye and our short rib and our brisket, then we're not selling those cuts.
Right.
So for us, for the shops that I've worked in, it's less important what the cuts are and it's more important their fat content. Mm. You're grinding the muscle through a grinder. You don't know what muscle it is. Unless it's dry, super dry aged steak, you're not going to see a huge difference in like the texture or the flavor. Mm. It's all about fat content. And I think the fat content, if you're eating grass-fed beef, should be like 70-30 or like 80-20 at the most. Mm-hmm. So otherwise it's going to be dry and it's not going to be very flavorful.
Yeah.
So
a lot of people seem to think that having super, super, super lean meat is like the best thing. I don't know enough. What do you think?
I don't know. I think there's like a weird thing going on with the paleo CrossFit thing. And I don't know. That's a huge part of our customer base, because they're all eating lots of meat. And there's also something that my customers always tell me about called ketosis. They're like keto state or something. It's some diet that has to do with meat. We sell a lot of bones because of it.
People make broths?
Yeah,
or?
Bone broth is really huge right now. Into bone it's broth huge, right which is now. Funny because, so we've always made bone broth.
Yeah.
We called it stock. And then the New York Times wrote an article about bone broth, and we couldn't keep our bones in house. And we started calling our stock bone broth, and it was like, we couldn't keep it on
there's
the shelves.
There's a place in LA that literally is like a little hut, and they just like sell bone broth.
There's a place here too, isn't it called Brodo?
It's in the East Village, I know, it's like so just crazy. Put your it's bones in water, and ta-da, you get...
And honestly, people, these people that start these like trends in foods, it's like, I would love to just come up with some random food item and be like, this is trendy, and like get everyone to Instagram and tweet about it, and like see if, and then like invest in that product.
I know, what
could
we do? Let's think
like,
of something.
We need to discover the next kale.
Think of something that already is around.
But also the paleo thing.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know.
Lean meat. Lean meat.
Yeah, lean meat.
Is lean meat better for you than other
meat? Yeah, I mean, fat is fine for you in moderation like anything else, but too much lean meat is also not great for you. Too much meat in general is not great for you. Too much of anything.
Yeah,
I mean, soy especially.
Everything in moderation, guys.
Yeah, it's true.
I avoid soy like the plague.
It's really bad. It's bad for the environment too, and that's something that like a lot of my vegetarian friends and I talk about, because they'll give me shit about things, and I'm like, well, you're eating so much soy and it's horrible for your body, it's terrible for the environment, and also you're like wearing a fur coat, so go fuck yourself.
I love it when people give, like, when people will shit on people for wearing fur or for, I don't know, eating meat or whatever. It's like, okay, well, critically look at yourself. And if you are living the most sustainable eco-friendly life,
it's like,
where nothing that you own is from an animal, and
also
that
like
doing,
that you make sure all of
like
your vegetables
shoes aren't leather,
are being, not being, you know, farmed by
like children,
labor.
Exactly,
and also like you're not eating so much quinoa, which is like the most corrupt, horrible trade, and it's horrible for the environment, horrible for human rights. No one talks about it. they just want to talk about meat. But
well, I mean, there's the whole issue then that goes deeper with like fair trade, with like what you're saying, mm-hmm. like quinoa and bananas and limes coconut and water. Coconuts.
It's
and
like we're all fucking stuff. Up. Yeah. Let's just be nice to each other and like try to figure it out.
I agree.
But I think that it's cool that what you're doing, I feel like you are so much more than like a butcher. You're like a meat educator.
Oh,
you're like a sustainability educator.
I think so, too. I think it's really cool. And I think it's really cool, like, as a woman to be able to be sort of like a face, the face of an industry. I think that's really exciting.
How many other female butchers are there?
I can pretty much name them on my hand. Like, and there were less when I started, and now it's sort of becoming a thing. It's funny. There's this guy that came over from London. So I went to London this past summer and was cutting in a shop there just to like learn other new things. And
are there different styles in different parts of the world?
Huge, yeah. Well, so it's interesting because the States are such an amalgamation of tons of different cultures. So there's no consistency even from like shop to shop in state to state. It basically depends where the people who are in the shop are from. So I went over there because there's more consistency across the board of like how they cut things. And they have also never gone the way of like factory farming and grain feeding their beef.
Which is so crazy.
So I spent a lot of time on like, I spent some time on a lambing farm and a pig farm. But a guy came over from England who worked at the same shop that I was at this past summer. And he was talking to me about it and he was like, yeah, I mean, in the past year, because when I went there last summer, no one would let me in except this one guy. Hmm. And he's like, yeah, in the past year, there's like tons of girls coming in now asking for internships and apprenticeships. And
interesting.
That's really cool. I think that's awesome.
Yeah, definitely.
So do you have any word of advice for our women that might be interested in being butchers?
Yeah, I think know that you're going to have to bust your ass probably 10 times harder than anyone to make sure that people really recognize that you're passionate about this, but go around and ask for apprenticeships, be willing to work for free, and this goes for anyone who wants to do this. I think that because it's become kind of a cool, trendy thing, there is this influx of people wanting to do it, and then when they actually are doing it, they're like, this is not sexy, this is disgusting and really hard work. So just know that you might not love it, and that's okay, you're still cool, but like you know, you have to really want it to do something like this, because so just know, if you're a woman and you want to do this, you're going to have to work probably 10 times harder than anyone, any of the guys that you're up against. And you really have to want it, because it's going to be gross and it's going to be hard work, and you're not going to make very much money. So just stick with it.
Sounds like a great
I love my life.
Yeah. I really don't feel like that's with like every industry. It's always like, it's no matter what you want to do, you're going to be up against a bunch of thirsty asshole men.
Yeah. Wow. No, it's true. You have to be really hungry and you have to want it really badly. And that goes for kitchen work in general. It's kitchen work for men and women. It's difficult and it is harder as a woman.
Well, I know, transitioning into what we usually transition to, sexploration. I don't know if anyone's feeling super sexy.
I feel super sexy.
But I am interested, and it is in the vein of sexploring, because I think that like dating and intimacy is all in one. I am interested in knowing, do guys get intimidated by the fact that you're a butcher? Like, is it hard? Do guys find it hard to date you because you're this like powerful woman that can slaughter them and cut them up into pieces?
Well, so that's a thing, though. It's like, guys will come into the shop all the time and be like, oh, I wouldn't want to piss you off, blah, blah. I'm like, but you wouldn't say that to a man.
No, they would never.
This is my job.
Yeah.
So I'm dating for the first time in like over 5 years. I was in a really long-term relationship and we broke up. And I think part of that was that I was so driven and focused on something, not necessarily it didn't matter that it was butchery, but it, you know, I think he did feel emasculated in some ways. The dating scene is kind of a nightmare for me, because
it sucks too, because I bet really hot guys go into your butcher shop.
Totally. They're always married. It's like a family place.
Yeah. Well, I also just feel like if you're actually caring about your food and your meat, you're in a serious relationship.
Absolutely. They're like shopping
people,
together.
Yeah, people, like it's like if you have a dog or you're like caring about what goes in your body, you're definitely not single.
And there are a lot of like weird couple fights at the counter. Like people fight about
really?
Their meat a lot, which is amazing.
Oh,
and it always makes me like, I'm never going to do this again.
LOL.
But I think guys at first, like I downloaded a bunch of dating apps and I was doing them. And
they're the worst.
They're horrible. I just deleted them finally yesterday. I was like, I can't fucking deal with this. But
I also feel like you're on your phone looking for men instead of like being in public and being like, oh, there could be like a guy on the street. I'm like, I'm in bed on a dating app.
It changes the way that people choose each other because no one really makes the choice. It used to be like, okay, you kind of suck and you're terrible sometimes, but like, I like you and I choose you and I'm going to stick it out. And now it's like everyone's always in the back of their head like, what if there's something else out there? And I can see it and I can see it. So like, yeah, I don't know. And guys, I think at first think that there's like a weird fetishy thing at first. They're like, this is hot that you're a butcher. Like, let's talk about meat. And then they're like, and then I'm like, I don't eat meat. I don't want to talk about this. Shut up. Be like, I don't know. I think in the end, it's not that hot.
Also, I would love for any of those guys to like come in and watch you like break down
or actually
an
try to break down an animal.
Yeah,
to do it themselves. To
I know,
what
but
you
I do,
do
find that I have like a low threshold for wimpiness. With
That's
men.
Great. Yeah.
Yeah, but I also think it's like, you know, I have to work on being softer. Maybe I don't know.
Would you ever date somebody?
I don't think you need to work on anything. You just got to be you.
Yeah. Who's a butcher? Yeah. Yeah, I totally would. I mean.
That would be the best
but
reality.
Butcher
that
romance.
Would be the best reality show.
Oh my
show
god, reality show about
the
butcher
guy that
romances.
Came from London who was visiting this week, we kind of were like, whoa. He came in and like cut with me for a day and now he's in LA and he,
whoa, is that like a sexy time?
He came in and cut with me for the day.
Was like, I like it's so good to hear your voice. And I was like, are we doing like are we in love? Or
but
then it's like I don't know because I feel
oh
like
god,
a lot of
he's
guys
British
like,
that's
know, it's
hot.
Like, it's too much. But a lot of guys treat me like a pal, like a dude pal friend. And I don't want that. I want to be treated like a
woman. A guy
woman.
Calls you and said, it's so good to hear your voice. I'm sure they're not thinking of you as like a buddy.
Okay, question. Like was he like, that's was not sexual to me?
Yeah, definitely. Right?
Was he like putting
you? 30.
Whoa.
He's what?
Midnight.
It is whoa. Past midnight. That's a serious
wait,
call.
You were cutting until 12:30?
No. He called me. I was like in bed doing work.
Oh.
So
I love if you had like an after like oh let's go to the meet at the butcher shop at like 9 p.m.
No,
and you guys like
me.
Cut
he, like,
at
did
night.
The delivery with me like carried in the animal
so
and we
cute.
Like broke it down together. He showed we taught each other things. It was like
so like romantic.
You
returned on.
You learned
yeah,
something.
It was cute.
I think a great date is if you learn something.
I know this is bad though because I'm kind of sort of seeing someone right now and like I now I can't. Promote this podcast at all because he's gonna listen to it and be like, whoa.
We can
it's okay. Everyone's allowed to have crushes.
We've all talked that about so we've all terrible. Talked about a lot yeah. of
I
stuff.
Love my boyfriend now, but I will say I was just on James Franco's Instagram and I was like, huh. He's know, hot he's as fuck.
James yeah. Franco is really hot because he's like kind of
he
dirty
literally
and like
just
really
does
and
yeah.
funny.
He just yeah. does whatever the fuck he wants to yeah. do. And I'm like, go James Franco, do
I
want to
get James
thing.
Franco on our podcast.
I told you guys yeah. the story on the podcast about how I found James Franco in my bushes smoking weed in college.
What?
Yeah, which is sick. I think he should definitely come on yeah. the podcast.
I was actually like, in a okay. coffee shop in the West Village like when I was in college and he used to come because I think he was at Columbia or NYU at the time and he used to come and just nap on the couch for like hours.
Which is so crazy.
I love him. Yeah. I love him mm-hmm. so much.
Oh my gosh.
Unique
well,
soul.
I think that if anybody knows any hot butchers or non-butchers,
or just
like hot,
hot
dudes
that like
send
him
Cara's way.
Slide yeah. into our DM and yeah. we're going to set yeah. them up.
We're going to find Cara Love. Do
and if
have...
they're Jewish, my mom will be super happy
that
it's not a prerequisite.
At the end of each episode, we finish with a Lady Love and a woman that we admire that is just wonderful and great. You know, it can be anyone in the world, any woman on the planet. Lo?
Can I do it today?
Yeah, do it.
Yeah,
normally
we can have
our
two.
Normally
we can have two.
Our guest does our yeah. Lady Lovin', but I think that our Lady Lovin' today is Cara.
Oh,
yes. I love that.
I love that too. Oh,
that's true.
Because she's awesome.
Yeah, Cara, you're so badass. And I think that you're just like, you're in an industry that is so fucking intense
weird
and
so
like
male dominated and here
so
you are
male dominated
killing it.
And also you probably get so much hate. I can't
so
imagine
hate.
An industry where you maybe get more hate than
maybe
what
you
do
like a fur designer or something.
Yeah,
I also I that oh never mind
what
no let's do it.
What?
I was gonna say that one guy gets a lot of hate but I forgot his name so
is he a butcher
really oh, talk
guy,
about
like,
it
did monopolize the AIDS drug.
Yes. Yeah. How did you know? That's where
Martin
my brain
Scarelli.
Went.
That's
I don't know.
So
I was
funny.
Thinking, like, who's the worst
I was like, who's the worst
planet?
Person in the world?
that guy.
Yeah.
Wait,
yeah,
Cara.
He is a real shit.
I'm so happy that Lo said that you are Lady Lovin' because you are, but I want to know who your Lady Lovin' is still anyway.
I have a huge crush on Nigella Lawson. I think she's fucking amazing. She... is really important for me as a woman in food, because she talks a lot about the way that women are programmed to think about foods as like guilty pleasures or not. And it's like, we have this guilt programmed into us about how we eat.
Yeah.
And she's like, no, I mean, food is good. Eat everything in moderation. And she's like sexy and curvy. And mm-hmm. I think a lot of the trend now of women in food is like, women in food are sexy, but we don't want them to look like women in food. So like, they're very thin and willowy and probably aren't eating the food that they're cooking. She looks like a woman who loves and enjoys food. She's smart.
Our listeners who maybe don't know who that is, mm-hmm. who is she?
She's a really famous British chef and sort of like food personality. And she's her first book was called How to Be a Domestic Goddess, which was like,
I have that book.
Yeah. And she's just really smart. Yeah. She's beautiful and she's smart. And she's like kind of a fuck up. Like she had some drug problems and like was with a bad dude. And
she's been divorced twice.
Yeah. She's rad.
Keeps it real.
She's living.
Just like, she's just normal, man.
Yeah.
Which is cool.
It's really cool.
So where can our listeners find you? Are you coming out with a new book anytime soon? What's going on?
So my book, Voracious, is coming out in paperback this summer in August.
It's called Voracious.
It's so cool. Can you just give like the premise?
Yeah, so we can already buy Voracious.
Yes, you can. It's in hardcover now. It's really beautiful in hardcover.
Great.
It is a book of 50 essays and recipes about food scenes in literature.
Awesome.
Yeah, so it doesn't have anything to do really with butchering. But I'm supposed to be writing another book. I'm not, but I am writing a screenplay, which I've never done before, and I don't know if anything's ever going to happen with it. But that's what I'm working on writing right now.
Amazing.
Yeah, and people can find me on Instagram. My name's just Cara Nicoletti, or Twitter, same thing.
Cara's Instagram is one of my favorite follows. It's like funny and it's crazy. The shit that I see on your Instagram is
I'm
like
looking it up right now.
I never see shit like that. I don't know.
Yeah, I guess. Yeah, I guess probably a lot of the women that follow me are like, I get a lot of unfollows.
Cara with the K.
Listen, I think if you get a lot of unfollows, you're doing something right.
Yeah, true. Yeah.
So, I found you.
People also hate when I post anything like personal. They're like, we don't care about your like niece or your life. We just want to see food.
The first photo I pulled up of on Cara's Instagram, it's literally like her in a butcher's outfit and someone comments underneath, send nudes.
I think that was my best girlfriend.
Beautiful in this photo.
Yeah.
It's Cara.
I'm glowing because
with all of this sausage.
Sausage is my
favorite
thing.
And she looks beautiful.
Well, thank you so much for coming
on
our show.
Thank you for having me. This was really fun. This was great.
I think that I want to. We have like a meat class with you?
Totally. Yeah.
Meat party.
Yeah. If anyone's ever interested in that, just contact me. And like, I'm really interested in teaching things at the shop. So
awesome. And you can find Cara if you're in New York and you want to buy meat for yourself.
Totally. I'm at Foster Sundry, which is 215 Knickerbocker in Bushwick, Brooklyn. It's off the Jefferson L. It's a great shop. Also great cheese and coffee there.
Go visit her.
Do it.
Okay, great. Thanks, girl.
Great. Thank you so much. Bye.
Bye.